Well, hello everybody. It's Helen here again, introducing episode 3 of our podcast. And I'm lucky enough today to be sitting here in Sakala again with Louise Gisby, who is the Deputy CEO of Safe in Sussex, who will be the recipient of all the money that you lovely people are donating to our Madcap Challenge chasing round India. So, welcome Louise.
Thank you, Helen. Good morning, everybody.
So Louise and I have known each other quite a long time and have travelled our fundraising journey together. I'm still raising pennies and she's reaching for the stars, climbing her way up through the management structure of the charity, which is fabulous as well. So tell us a little bit about Safe in Sussex.
So Safe in Sussex is a charity that began in 1977. When a group of women got together and they petitioned one of the local councils for a house for women who were experiencing domestic abuse, for a safe place for those people to be. And since then, the charity has grown into a West Sussex-wide organisation that provides a whole host of services to people who are experiencing or at risk of domestic abuse. So that includes refuge accommodation for women and their children, where they can come and be in a place of safety and get support. And also we've got some flats, which are our dispersed refuges, which are for people who maybe living in a refuge with lots of other women isn't appropriate for them, or perhaps it's a man, or maybe somebody from the LGBT community that needs a place of safety, so we're able to offer that too. In the community, we've got a whole host of services that we deliver. We deliver programmes which are educational and supportive to women. We have Freedom Programme, which is a free programme for any woman to attend who wants to find out more about domestic abuse and the reality of it and the different types of domestic abuse that they could be experiencing. And we run those across West Sussex in various venues. And we also run programmes for men. We have a men's Hope to Recovery programme, which is for men to find out about domestic abuse if they think they're experiencing it, and also one for the LGBT community as well. And we have recovery programmes, because when people have left that abusive relationship, sometimes they need support with their recovery. So we run recovery programmes that help people to move forward with their lives and live their lives free from domestic abuse.
It's interesting you talk about the men and the LGBT community, because everybody assumes, maybe that's a bit of a wide statement to make, but even now when people come and talk to me about it, they still have in their head battered wives. They don't see that it might be a man, or it might be somebody from one of the other walks of life, or even for the women's community, if there's no visible signs of abuse, they don't think it's happening.
Yeah, and I think domestic abuse is really underreported anyway. We know that one in four women will experience some kind of domestic abuse in a lifetime, and it's one in six men.
That's so really quite high, isn't it?
It is high. So we know it's happening to all people in all walks of life. But our main focus has always been women, because we know that every week 2 to 3 women are killed by a current or former partner. And so our focus has always been towards women, but we recognise that it does happen to men.
It doesn't end there.
It doesn't end there. Men experience it too, and they need support as well.
And are the police more receptive now to, that might be a hot potato, political hot potato, I don't know. I like being a bit risque. But I'm guessing that there's more awareness than they do pitch up now, or not?
I think there's a lot more training for the police.
Which is as valid as...
Absolutely. We as an organisation have delivered a lot of training to the police to help them to recognise trauma, to help them to recognise domestic abuse could be happening within that home when they're visiting. So I wouldn't say they're there yet, but I think they're on the road. They're on the road. They're on the journey. That's about as political as I'll get.
That's fine, and I don't expect you to say anything else. But it, again, it's a question people say, you know, to me, oh, well, will anybody come? And I always go, well, of course they will. But will they? Or will they know? You know, so it is.
Exactly. And I do know that our police and crime commissioner has really focused on domestic abuse, and we've been very fortunate to receive funding from them for our services.
So that's them holding their hands up so and going, we realise there's a problem, so let's try and help.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, which is fabulous.
Yeah.
So, tell us a little bit about you. How did you get to be where you are?
Oh, me? Well, so I started my career in the world of fundraising about quite a few years ago.
We won't talk about that.
And I worked for a home, I've worked for various homeless charities and also as a support worker as well as a fundraiser. And I know people that have experienced domestic abuse. And when the role of what was then, I was then the fundraising and marketing manager, came up at Safe in Sussex, I just thought, that's my job. That is my job. And it was a bit of an adventure to end up getting the job, which I won't go into because I had, well, I'll quickly say I had two interviews and the job was given to somebody else. But then 6 months later, I got a phone call from the organisation saying, would you still consider taking the job?
They saw the light.
So that was over 8 years ago.
And that's pretty much the time we met.
Yeah, pretty much the time we met, yeah, at a networking group. And I love what the organisation does. I get the privilege of seeing the difference it makes to people, because so often people think, oh, it's all doom and gloom. And yes, it is. It's tragic that people are experiencing what they are. And, you know, I see horrific things, hear horrific things. But also there's so much hope.
Yeah, and I think that's something else that I want to talk about today, because obviously we do an awful lot of madcap challenges that are fun, and we get people to engage with us because it's fun or crazy, or, you know, we bring a smile to people's faces. But underneath all of that is a hugely traumatic and sad problem.
Mm.
But you're not going to get somebody kind of, if you go along and say, look, watch the, well, you might do, I suppose, if you watch this video of something awful, give us money. But, or if you say to people, come along and watch us jump out of an aeroplane, they're more likely to kind of respond to that because it's a feel-good factor.
Yeah.
But then there are, I know from talking to you over the years, there are positive stories, and people who've gone through the programs go on to beat the situation they're in and go on and have amazing lives.
Absolutely. And we hear, we get, I think one of the greatest things about our staff will tell you that work, particularly in our refuge service, is the privilege of watching somebody come in to the refuge absolutely broken, no self-esteem, no confidence, thinking that their life is at an end and what is there for them, and watching them grow and develop in confidence and self-esteem, engaging in training and education, moving out of the refuge, and then hearing from them a couple of years later saying things like, I'm a nurse now, my children are really settled and happy, so one's going off to university and this, and, you know, and hearing that their lives
have turned around,
have gone on, and that what the domestic abuse hasn't defined them and stopped them from being able to achieve.
So you
and
should
move
be
forward.
Really a stepping stone from that awful pond of nastiness.
Yes.
Into the light of something beautiful.
Yes,
happening.
Absolutely. And I think that is, I think our workers would say that they see themselves as people who want to show others that there is still hope, mm-hmm. that there is hope and that you can have a future. I'm not saying it's going to be easy, because we all have struggles in our life, and I'm sure there are still things about their past that haunt them. If you've got children, quite often you're still going to have some kind of contact with the other person, depending on if there's court orders and things. It doesn't totally end, but it doesn't have to stop you from living your life.
I'll tell you a little story that I'd just like to share, especially because Louise is here and she took part in this particular challenge we did last year, about, I think she's a refuge manager, Siram.
Yeah.
As I mentioned before, I like the crazy. I do slightly mad things. We did a parachute jump, freefall parachute jump last year, of which Louise took part in, along with Debbie, one of the community fundraisers. But one of the ladies who took part on the day we did it, we couldn't all do it together for various reasons, Siram, she epitomised what the challenge really is about, because the girls that I did it with, they're like, oh look, there's a plane, bring it on, we're going to be strapped to a fabulous guy, we're going to go 15,000 feet up in the air, jump out, have a laugh, land, we'll be fine. I have never seen anybody so nervous in my life. And we said to her, you can dip out, nobody's going to say anything, you tried. And she said to me, no, Helen, I'm going to do this. She was with a delightful guy from the Red Devils who looked after her. He was calm. He talked her all the way up in the plane. Apparently he talked her all the way down. She cried all the way up. She cried all the way down. But when she landed on the floor, that was the person I was proudest of. Not any of us, because we all wanted to do it and we didn't care. She challenged herself and won. And I hold her as a shining light, really, of people who do these things for whatever reason to support what she really believes in.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, she's an incredible worker.
Yeah.
Yeah, very passionate. And all of our staff are very passionate about what they do. And they want to support whoever comes through our doors that needs help.
Yeah.
And it's lovely to see.
Yeah, I mean, I've not met so many of the people at the sharp end, so to speak, but the few that I have, you can see they've got a passion to do what they want to do.
Yeah,
but you wouldn't do the job if you didn't.
No, no. Our child support workers in the refuge are off the scale crazy fun.
Yeah.
And they bring so much joy and happiness to those children. And the aim for them when they come to the refuge is that they walk away with a positive memory of their time spent there.
Mm-hmm.
So they leave with little memory books, some photographs of the things that they've done together. And if you follow us on social media, you'll see that we're always
lots of cake.
Posting pictures of things that the children have been doing in the playroom and, and the activities they've been up to.
I know one year you were asking for worry dolls, and I love these worry dolls that were kind of friendly monsters that they wrote things in and put them in their mouths and zipped the mouth up so the doll ate the worry and they didn't have to think about it
exactly anymore. And the child support worker is the voice of the child in the whole situation, so they dedicate their time to those children and they have weekly sessions with that child support worker, and it's a place where they can really talk about their feelings in a safe place where they know that
they can say whatever they like.
They can say whatever they like, that somebody's listening, and sometimes the child support worker can speak to the parent about what that child is feeling, because it's so hard sometimes for the mum when she's been through so much to be able to connect with her child. She might not have been allowed to. She might not have been allowed to parent that child in the way that she wanted to. She might have been stopped by the perpetrator from parenting and giving that child what the attention that they need. So that's the other part of the child support worker's role, is to rebuild that bond, help mum and child rebuild the bond together, do activities with them together.
So how does it all paid for?
Well, it's a bit of a jumble of things. So we get a small amount. I think we get 23% of our funding comes from the government. So we have funding for two of our refuges from the local authority, and then the rest is made up from grants, from people like yourself, Helen, doing madcap crazy things for us, and us just fundraising in whatever ways that we can to keep our services going.
So what does it cost, roughly?
It's just under $1 million a year to run our services.
So we have to raise that. Well, I mean, as an organisation,
we need to know that we've got that coming in each year to deliver our services.
So it's a big old number.
It's a big old number, and I don't know. Every year, it's
certainly at the moment
we worry, but we seem to somehow
And I think
the goodness of people,
the whole economic situation. I mean, I find even with what we're doing, we struggle
definitely.
To get people want to come, they want to help, but it's a constant battle to say, look, we're doing this, you know, and you have to keep banging on about it the whole time.
Yeah, it's very hard, and if people don't have the disposable income that they had before, then, you know, you cut your cloth as to what you have, don't you? So,
and then we have the wonderful Debbie in the team of
we
raising
do
money.
Have wonderful Debbie, our community fundraiser, who is in the world of gingerbread. So every year we have a gingerbread house competition, And yes. Debbie heads that up, and there's all different categories that you can enter.
I think I've had my arm twisted.
Have you had your arm twisted?
Yes, but in turn I've twisted Lindsay's arm downstairs, so I think it's Lindsay who's learning about gingerbread construction at the minute.
Oh, lovely.
I've no idea what that's going to be, but I'm sure it'll be something.
I'm sure it'll be brilliant. Yeah, it's a lovely way of bringing individuals, companies, schools together.
Yeah.
And last year we had created quite a nice little scene of all the gingerbread houses.
And who doesn't like cake of some description or other?
Gosh, and it's great fun for children to do, to join in and decorate their houses.
I think we might have been entered by Debbie into the business category. I think we might need to end up in the children's category.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's okay.
Yeah.
And then there's Tash, who I don't see as much because she's over the other side.
Tash works for us as well. She works part-time. She helps with funding bids, a bit of community, and is the person who does all of our social media. So in 16 hours, she crams a lot in. And I think that's the thing about our organisation, that we don't have lots of people working full-time. We've got Debbie that works 20 hours in fundraising, Tash that does 16, and then myself, but my role has changed, that it's not just fundraising.
I seem to remember ringing you one day in the summer, and I could hear banging and clattering, and you said to me, "I'll ring you back, I'm just putting together flat back furniture."
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
So that's a whole different role.
Yeah, and last week I was taking up old carpet out of a refuge. So, you know, it's when you need it, you need it. And when you work for a charity, I think you just have to be prepared to roll your sleeves up and just do whatever.
Yeah.
So it makes every day
interesting.
You never know what's going to happen. So.
And then we have Jenny. Yes? Jenny? Have I got the name right? Yes?
Jenny
is...
She's the trustee. Unfortunately...
Has she parted company?
Jenny has retired from our trustee board and has moved to Ireland.
Oh.
So our chair of trustees is Leslie.
Leslie now.
And yeah, we've got a very active trustee board who are very supportive of us and do all that they can to ensure that charity's running smoothly and that we're abiding by all of the Charity Commission's laws and governance. So... Yeah, they're a good team.
I think it's, for me, it's lovely to be involved in something that's very local rather than...
Yeah.
I'm not saying that, you know, people, you know, organisations like Women's Aid are necessary, but obviously it is nicer to be involved with something much...
In your locality, knowing that you're making a difference
to those people.
In your local area. Definitely. I think... For me, as somebody that's worked in charity for many years, I couldn't ever imagine myself working in a national charity. It needs to be local to me and making a difference in my area, I think.
So for anybody who's listening to this and would like to get involved, what can they do? Apart from handing me lots of dosh when I go past with a bucket in a rickshaw.
Handing lots of dosh is always amazing, but obviously there are other things. If people follow us on social media, they will see that... Sometimes we ask for things, like we might ask for baby clothes or adults' clothes, we might ask for bedding, and those things are always on our social media. So if you haven't got anything financially you can give, you might find that, I don't know, you've got some saucepans, and we happen to put that we're looking for saucepans for a woman that's moving out of our refuge, and you can donate that way as well. Or maybe you think, I haven't got any spare income, but I'd like to do something for Safe in Sussex. I'd like to put on my own little event. Then, you know, get in touch with the fundraising team. It's fundraising@safeinsussex.org.uk. Get in touch with us and we'll have a conversation with you, and we'll support you with whatever event you might want to do for us.
Well, that's fabulous. Well, thank you for coming and talking to us today.
Thank you for inviting me, and thank you, Helen, for all you're doing to support us. I know you don't like to blow your own trumpet, but, you know, I'm so glad we met each other 8 years or more ago, because you've been brilliant for the organisation.
I think possibly your husband Mick has something to do with that, because he is the most delightful and supportive of chaps.
Yes.
And he, every time I meet him, he greets me with this wonderful smile, and I think, the pair of you together, you're very special, so I'm very happy.
Thank you.
Brilliant. Well, that's the end of episode 3, and I hope next will be Amanda Duke, who's driving one of the other rickshaws with her son. Ooh. Not quite sure what Tom makes of all of this. I think he thinks we're all completely bonkers, but there we go.
Sounds fun.
Yeah. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.